Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. We are Three Women, Three Ways. Thank you so much for joining us. This is an almost spring weekend here, and hopefully the good weather will stick around for a while now. We've had it in and out. Right now, what we're going to have around here is kind of a news update, so we have that to look forward to. But first, let's introduce ourselves. We are the women who go three ways and think about three different aspects of every topic that we come up with, and we've got a bundle of them today. But first, Pinkley, you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. Good morning, ladies and listeners. This is Pinkley, or Connie Sue. I'm the nutty little lady that runs around in pink all the time. I'm a survivor of domestic violence, and when I left my beautiful home and garden in the middle of summer, which reflected all the pink colors of the world, I decided that my soul wasn't going to be taken with my flowers that were dying. I would carry it along with me no matter where I went. So here I am a few years later with a bachelor's degree and working in the field of sexual assault and domestic violence for the last 15 years. I'm a trainer, a speaker, all-around activist, and work for a local nonprofit agency serving survivors of sexual assault and domestic violence. So that's my thing this morning. How about you, Miss Deborah?
Hey, good morning. Well, you know, I usually start out with my name, Deborah Adams. I live in Southwest Washington. I'm currently working from my kitchen table and also in the public, but I have a tagline, and my tagline is, I have lived it, I have studied it, and I have worked it. And by the it, I mean domestic violence. And that's another three ways, reasons we came up with our title. There's three ways that we can look at violence against women and use that as a lens to look at all topics of news, current events. And that's one reason why we came together and had this show. So I'm going to toss it back to you, Heather.
Okay, and I come from an interest in domestic violence. I haven't been working professionally in it for many, many years like my co-hosts, but I do have an interest in that field, and I went back to school a few years ago, and I'm happy to say that I am now officially working on my dissertation to finish up my PhD.
Hey.
In organizational psychology, and after that I plan on taking just a few more months to have my major change to forensic psychology, which would be helpful to me in working with domestic violence folks and the courts. So that's my background, and normally on this show we pick a topic and we kind of work it around and ask our listeners to join us, and we kind of just try to figure out what's going on with that issue. Today we got a number of issues. We kind of thought it would be important to give updates on some of the things that we've been talking about before. And one of those issues that we addressed before, but we're going to give an update on, is VAWA. And Deborah, are you going to give us our update on VAWA?
I am, because I'm really excited. In fact, I'm thrilled that our House of Representatives passed the same version of the Violence Against Women Act that our senators passed a couple weeks prior. So we now have a very solid and more expanded services available to everyone to protect against the violence, including domestic violence and sexual violence. So we did get that voted through, and that just happened on Friday morning about 9 o'clock our time. So that was pretty exciting. One note on that, we've had the law for 15 years, and every time it had been up for reauthorization in the past, which was 2000 and 2005, it was unanimously passed by both Senate and the House. There was absolutely no controversy about the law. So this year, when it came up into controversy, it was quite a surprise to me, that all of a sudden we would have this huge dialogue countrywide about not even having it. So that's pretty exciting news for us. What do you think?
Well, Deb,
well,
tell us what VAWA means.
Violence Against Women Act.
Yeah.
And it started in 1994, and it serves to fund training for law enforcement officers and community-based advocates and prosecutors and all law enforcement personnel, and working to provide services to protect people from domestic violence and sexual assault.
And what was significant about this bill was that it was passed originally. I mean, it was really landmark legislation 15 years ago to help, you know, in the field of domestic violence issues. Why do you think, Deborah, there was such controversy over it this time?
Well, this time they included language that returned jurisdiction to Native American tribal courts, where tribal courts could try a crime of domestic violence on their reservation land, even if the offender was not an Indian. So it returned that jurisdiction for them. It also expanded U visas for immigrant survivors of domestic violence so that they would be able to retain stay in the United States and become a citizen versus having to be deported. And then another area that it expanded services is for our lesbian, gay, bi, trans, questioning friends and family. So the problem that I saw it was, through my perspective, was that the law is good for everybody who looks like me, which the majority of our senator and House representatives are white and male. So I admit my view could be a little tainted.
Well, you know, I tend to be more conservative than you, but I do see, you know, fiscally I'm more conservative than both of you guys, but socially, you know, I do see the need for some of these programs. I think from the news that I saw, at least the people who were opposed, which were mostly Republicans, they introduced their own bill, right?
Right.
But they kept saying it was because of money, that expanding something, the program, would cost more money. Is that true?
Well, it wasn't that much more money, was it, Connie Sue? And I can't remember the exact amount of money, but usually, yes, when you expand services, then it will impact money somewhat. So I guess the Republicans' line of thought was that it's going to increase government spending rather than decrease it. But
yeah,
there are services that I think are essential.
Oh, we have a musical accompaniment. Yeah,
too many electronic gadgets around here.
Yeah. Well, that's the way it works for all of us. Thing that I agree with you on is that it does, there are certain things that are crucial. And as much as I love research, I don't think research is crucial if we're in tight times. I mean, we all have to make decisions, and the first decisions that we usually use to spend money on is our safety and well-being. So for me, you know, yeah, I tend to be conservative, but I also think, come on, guys, this is a safety issue.
Interesting article that I just wanted to share with you. And you know how they will list how all the politicians vote on these laws and things. Well, there is a congressman, a House of Representatives member, who went on air and publicly said he voted for the Reauthorization of Violence Against Women Act, and the reality is that he did not. So what do you think about that? He joined. There were 137 other legislators that were Republicans, and including 10 women who voted against the reauthorization of it. But why would he vote against it and then turn around and publicly say he voted for it?
I don't know.
Wow. Huh?
Yeah, well, no kidding. But
That's such an easy thing to figure out, I guess, as far as, I mean, that's public knowledge who voted for or against.
Yeah, and it absolutely is. I mean, as soon as it was passed and it was on all the social media sites, they put up the number who voted for and against, and they immediately listed the names. So, you know, that was pretty telling that as soon as it passed, they had published the list of legislator votes. So for him to go on any kind of radio or television show and say he voted for it was pretty interesting strategy. I don't know how far it's going to get him, though.
The only bill that I really think should be passed right now, I mean after VAWA, is they should really consider passing a bill that says that you can't pass a vote on a bill if you haven't read it, the whole thing, word for word. And if it's too long for you to read, it's too long to be a bill. It amazes me how so many of these legislators don't, you know, they go on an assessment from a staffer of what's in the bill, unless there's one particular area that is of interest to them, like abortion or something like that, and they don't really read the legislation, the proposed legislation. They just pass it saying, yeah, that sounds like a good idea, and then it's left to staffers later on to administer and, in some cases, interpret what the legislature intended. And I think that whole process is just wacky. And unfortunately, I think that VAWA got caught in that whole thing. I think a lot of legislators just really didn't know for sure what they were voting on, and they just made wild assumptions about things. Does that make sense to any of you guys?
Yeah, it does. I think that there's also language included in that talk specifically about protecting the gay, lesbian, bi, trans, you know, the LGBTQ community. Mm-hmm. So I think any time when you introduce new language like that, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think that just gets people's feathers riled up. I think it taps into their own values and beliefs about who we're serving. And, of course, from an advocate's perspective, it doesn't matter who you are. If you're a victim, you're a victim, and that includes survivors. So we work with both all people who identify in all different ranges. So there's that piece of, you know, I think that people's values and morals were triggered. I actually think that's my own personal opinion of it.
Okay. So you think that it was more of an emotional response than having to do with money, with people who are opposed to it?
Money could be an issue where they could put it out there and say, this is because of that. But if you, I mean, that's, like I said, it's my personal opinion. I think when some of the new language was introduced, it hasn't really changed. But you're talking about a community of people that identify in a different way than a male, white, heterosexual person. Now you're talking about values, people's own personal values and beliefs about who we should be helping and who we should be protecting. And there was also language introduced as far as immigration, and that in itself was a whole different topic. So you're taking topics that, or issues, current events that are controversial, and you put it into a bill that has run on the assumption that we're serving women and children. And so I think that's sort of what held it up. What do you think, Deb?
Yeah, I think it was definitely more emotional than fiscal, even though that's what they're saying. It's all about money. I think it was definitely on a personal, everybody took it very personally. But, see, that's the part that's not okay with me, because in the United States, everybody comes from an immigrant family. Everybody in the United States, except for our Native Americans, who are indigenous people to our land, you know, how can we be so judgmental about someone who is newer to the U.S. than we are? And the point being is that the VAWA Act itself, every year it was reauthorized, they made it more inclusive. And so,
right.
Yes, that's the real issue, is more inclusive, expanding services to reach everybody, no matter how they identify as a human being.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I think maybe we could talk about one of our other recaps and updates if you want to move on.
I think that sounds like a good idea. Please give us a call. Let us know your two cents about some of these topics. And our phone number is 646-378-0430. We'd love to hear your input. And we also have a chat room. And, Deborah, how can they access our chat room?
Well, if you come to our show, our blog talk show, through our page, if you go arrow down to the bottom of the page and you will see the chat box, and you can be anonymous. You don't have to put your name in. You don't have to give your name at all to talk with us. We appreciate confidentiality. So please feel free to join us.
Yeah. And again, our phone number is 646-378-0430. So give us a call. Pinkley, did I step on you?
No. I was just going to say that the chat room's been busy.
Yes.
Good. If you want to toss out some of the comments that some of the people in the chat room have made, I think that would be helpful, too. Why don't we take a break? We're a couple minutes early, but let's take a little break for a sponsorship. And, Deborah, you are going to give us a little sponsorship promo for your program, your other blog talk show.
Absolutely. Self-Empowerment Strategies is working towards changing social and cultural norms. And to that end, we want to make it okay to talk about domestic violence, not be silent anymore, and allow people the space and time and support they need to work their way through it. So Self-Empowerment Strategies is also a blog talk radio show. It's on Sundays at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Come on and join me. I'd love to have you comment. I'm having a guest tomorrow at 7 p.m., and she is an author of her own experience with violence, and I'm looking forward to my radio show tomorrow night, Self-Empowerment Strategies, Sundays at 7 p.m.
It's a good one. You don't want to miss that. Meanwhile, now we can kind of jump back to what we were going to do with our changing of topics. And Pinkley, you were going to talk about some current events here.
Yeah, I wanted to just touch briefly on Oscar Pistorius. It was interesting. There was actually 2020 did a, was it 2020 that did a hour-long presentation special on this last night. And there's a couple things, and for those of you who don't know, this is a person who, Oscar Pistorius, lives in South Africa. He's become worldly famous for his being in the Olympics, and he runs with prosthetics, so he's an amputee on both legs, and was the first person to ever run in the Olympics, and become quite famous in the sports world. And unfortunately, this year on February 14th, Valentine's Day, his girlfriend, who was in his home with him, was shot and killed. And so he's been arrested for the murder of his girlfriend. He claims that he was shooting out of self-defense, that he thought that there was an intruder in the home, so there's a lot of controversy about that. So, of course, he's pleading not guilty. But as this has been unfolding, what's been interesting is another person in his past, another relationship has come forward, saying that there was incidences of assault in the relationship. And there's also an uncovering of a really strong interest in guns. So that's sort of what I know, other than the fact that this person is dead. She was a famous model. Ravina Stunkup, who was 30 years old, she was shot 4 times. They're charging him with premeditated murder under the South African judicial system. He's also known as the Olympian amputee, known as the Blade Runner, because of the carbon fiber blades he runs on. So, of course, there's a lot of controversy around this, that's what I know right now. So any thoughts about that?
Well, I think it's a tragedy, number one. You have two very high-profile human beings in South Africa, so naturally this will, you know, gain a lot of media attention. Unfortunately, I think the three of us are just too familiar with this kind of story about the situation, about, you know, an abuser becoming lethally violent. I'm kind of dumbfounded. I mean, you do think, you would hope that someone who had been through the trauma that Oscar had been through would not turn out to be this type of person. But, you know, you can't, that's not a predictor, right, Heather?
No, I don't think so at all. But, you know, from what I'm reading, now maybe this is just my, you know, my sensitivity toward domestic violence, but when I read it, I just thought, red flag, red flag, of course, you know, this mm-hmm. is
right.
a domestic violence issue.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I don't know, South Africa, if they have, you know, dealt with a lot of domestic violence murders, you know, perhaps not as, I don't know, as many as the United States has dealt with. But
or that have been reported. And, you know, domestic violence, we know, goes often unreported. And the thing that's unfolding right now is the fact that he had a very strong attachment to really high energy, fast cars, a really fast adrenaline-filled life, which, of course, doesn't make a person an abuser, but the fact that his infatuation with guns, I mean, there are some unfolding huge red flags that are coming out, and this person actually, and let me backtrack, I may have to correct myself, this incident that came forward about another alleged domestic violence came out in 2009. And basically what his attorney was trying to do was settle out of court with this case.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And so,
how could you?
Yeah. And now.
That is incredible. Settling out of court on a murder case.
Well, no. This is on the previous domestic violence.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Alleged domestic violence, okay?
All right.
And so now this, her name is Cassidy Taylor Memory, 21, has filed a countersuit asking for a public apology. She said he stepped on her foot, injured her foot, and then slammed the front door on her. And then, of course, his claim is that she kicked at the front door and must have injured her foot that way. So the point of this is that as this unfolds, there's been another incident that has come forward.
Yeah.
That they're trying to cover up and settle.
Yeah,
And saying that because of this allegation in 2009, his attorney, Gary Pritchard, told ABC News Friday that his client has lost speaking engagements and endorsement deals because of the public surrounding the 2009 assault claim.
Well, I think that's appropriate.
So he asked for a settlement weeks before Pistorius was actually arrested on Valentine's Day for the shooting death of model Reva Stenkamp. And let's not forget, that's who the victim is here right now, is Reva Stenkamp. She is killed, she's murdered, she's dead. And for the sake of, until proven guilty, of course, in the legal world, you use the term alleged. But the fact is that now that there's information unfolding about this person, there does seem to be a lot of adrenaline rush activities that just seem to think of somebody really needing to have power and control over, you know, his life, and it's now spilling out into his relationships. And maybe there has been no other incident of this, but his need to control.
We have a caller. Let's bring our caller on board.
Absolutely.
Hello, caller.
Hi. Hi.
Are you wanting to join our conversation?
I suppose I could. I was kind of listening, but okay. I kind of understand what you guys are talking about. I guess you're talking about the murder of Reva. I don't know if it's murder or whether people want to call it manslaughter or what they want to call it, but yeah, you're right. She is dead, and we know that whether it was an accident or however it happened, it happened. I don't know. I my feeling about it is that there are a lot of people who have issues with violence, and there are always red flags for women.
Right.
You always know, you know, it doesn't, it's never a last minute thing where someone loses it. There is always an indication at some point to you that this person has maybe some issues with managing their temper, you know, maybe they're just a little bit jealous, you know, some jealousy things going on. And sometimes women look at that and go, oh, you know, it's just because he cares, or, you know, they're feeling a little bit sorry for that person almost, and thinking that, you know, it's not that big a deal until that person explodes.
Right. Caller, do you think that because the murder has occurred and the media has grabbed a hold of it and is, you know, putting it out there, do you think this is going to maybe increase previous relationships' courage to come and speak out about it?
Well, yeah, maybe some people who dated him before, or are you talking about those kinds of people?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Oscar was in a relationship before. Now that they're hearing about this murder, they're thinking, well, he also abused me, and maybe I can tell my story now.
Well, yeah, then I'm always a little bit suspect of people who wait until someone has been murdered before they come out. I don't know if you can always totally trust, because you don't know what the agenda is of some of the people who were in his past. But yeah, if it encourages people to say, well, actually, you know, there was something wrong in the relationship with me, but I kind of left it at that. And maybe this person wasn't able to leave, and that's why she ended up dead. I don't know. But,
right.
You know, we have to wait and see, because we're all, you know, we are just, it's all suspicion really at the moment. We don't really have any real proof that that was the case. And what we do know is that he has a brother who also has a past where he has been known to be violent with women. That came out in the media this week.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe there is a little history. I mean, I think sometimes, I guess, there's also the thinking that if you have a major disability and you've struggled all your life to really be recognized at every level, and to be treated equally as well, that maybe there could be some frustration there, some inbuilt kind of anger almost. And an ego as well, because to be at that level in your sport, to get the recognition that he had, there may have been some issues, you know, because he came back from the Olympics. He would have come back on a real high.
Right.
You know, he was recognized all over the world. People really loved him in the UK. In fact, I find it quite painful to watch it in a way, because I actually really kind of had a lot of respect for that guy. It was like, wow,
yeah.
Could he have really done that? Because he was such a great kind of almost role model for people out there,
right.
Particularly people with disabilities, who are trying to overcome, replacing disability with ability almost. I want this is about ability, not about my disability. And he got that message through to a lot of people. And for this to be his demise is really sad.
Well, caller, I have a question for you, because the thing that I always come to when discussing issues of potential domestic violence is we have to be very careful not to make excuses and not to blame the victim. To say, well, there are warning signs. You know, maybe there weren't. We don't know. But to say that, there might be warning signs, and so it basically what we're kind of unconsciously saying is that, well, she should have done something about it. It's partially her fault because she didn't do anything, or she didn't acknowledge it, or she didn't do her research, or she didn't pay attention to the signals. And I think it's important to remember that, no matter what his abilities or disabilities, no matter what problems he might have had in his life, no matter whether he had an anger problem or not, it's not okay to kill somebody. So if that is the issue, I think, I think what you were doing is trying to put it in perspective, but I think that we have to be cautious when we do that, to not provide excuses for what is possibly a perpetrator.
There's no excuses. I mean, if he killed her, he killed her. I mean, I absolutely agree. I was just trying to look at, what possibly could have been. Possibly, because we're all speculating, that possibly could have happened or could have been the case. All I know is that in a lot of domestic violence cases that are friends I've known, I've also been a victim myself, that, my experience has been that very often if you've been with that person for a while, you will see some behaviors that will challenge you to think, what is this person? What's going on for this person? I'm not saying that she did. She might not have seen anything, but a lot of people I know.
Well, I think we are kind of losing our caller here, Deborah.
Yeah.
Somebody is probably trying to call on your phone.
Someone called me, and he called again. The phone.
Okay. Again, technology gets us.
Yeah.
No, sorry, guys. I'm sorry. But yeah, so
this is Pinkley, one of the other three divas here.
Hi.
And I really appreciate your perspective on your sharing, because it sounds like to me we're all trying to process. There's a point in time where it's so unbelievable that someone would kill another individual, and we don't know all the facts. And of course, and I'm not an attorney, but I've had a lot of legal training, so I always have to put the word alleged. Whether or not it was premeditated, whether it was his story is true, that he thought there was an intruder, that he was scared, or in fact did actually, with intention, it was premeditated, is what the alleged, what the news stories are saying right now, is that there's still a process in which we have to go through to understand why someone would do this. And that's what I heard you saying in your story, and how you were processing, because this person is famous, and so I really appreciated your perspective. And I was just curious, where are you calling from, if you don't mind my asking?
From the UK. I actually have a show here in Blog Talk, so I do a show on relationships, and I have a show called The Inspirational Hour, Ebony's Inspirational Hour. So, I was going to do a show this week in my relationship shows about the whole case, and I actually changed my mind because there was something else that was more pressing for me this week. But I actually wanted to wait until we knew more about on the case, because I think it's still in a really early stage.
Correct.
And I wanted to wait until we knew more, because I think I think now everybody will be questioning, you know, the motive. Did he do it? Did he not do it? And we really don't know. So for me, I suppose as well, because he is the type of media figure that he is, you know, that I just wanted more information, really. So I waited to do the show. But seeing you guys doing it, I thought, let me jump on and just say something
really appreciate your perspective and your taking the time to chat with us this morning.
No problem. But, I think it's a great thing to look at it, because the whole domestic violence thing in the UK, and I guess like you guys in the US, it is such a big issue here. There are so many women that are victims of domestic violence, and it's just not a joke anymore. It's, you know, young ladies, you know, I'm always speaking to young women about just being aware, you know, of the whole domestic violence thing, because for older women, we know it's been around, you know, we will know people, maybe we've been victims ourselves, but the fact is we need people to recognize it, and there needs to be less of it. But for some reason, although it's heightened in the media, there isn't any less, you know, the figures are not less every year. They're actually, if anything, more. You know, there are more victims coming forward and more people reporting violence. So I don't know if that's because of the world we're living in currently, that, you know, the roles of men, you know, particularly where it's men and women, that people are not so clear about their roles. There's frustration because of the economy. There are lots of reasons that people give. But what we do know, there's more of it than ever before.
Well, this is Deborah, and I think the reason that there's more reporting is because our social and cultural norms are in the process of changing. Now, my parents' generation would have never been discussing this topic on any kind of radio show, right? And even my generation, I'm a grandmother, so that tells you a little bit, but we didn't talk about it when I was first married. But now that I'm past that and beyond all that, and I'm thinking about my grandchildren, I want to talk about it. I do not want this to be the norm, that this happens and nobody acknowledges it and nobody tries to do anything about it. So I think that's one of the reasons the three of us feel so strongly about always bringing up this topic through our lens of both lived experience, academic experience, and professional experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So thank you so much, caller. You really added to our program. Thank you so much, and we appreciate it.
Thank you, ladies.
All right. Bye.
Great show. Great show.
Thank you. So I think our caller shared a lot of information and a lot of things that about that particular case that many people are thinking. Connie Sue, what do you have any follow-up for what our caller said about this case?
Well, just that she's processing, and I think that our lens is so focused on knowing. I mean, we're experts in the field of domestic violence and sexual assault. We're advocates. We've been working in it. We've studied it. We've lived it, just like Deb says. But in our society, in our general population, I think this person, and she even knows about domestic violence and knows about warning signs, has her show, and just what a gift to have someone call in with that amount of knowledge. But people that don't have the amount of knowledge about domestic violence are an unbelievable and unfathomable thing for someone to shoot and kill another person.
Yeah.
It's, and especially someone who is as well known, has triumphed over his own different abilities to try to fit into the world. I mean, to go into the Olympics, initially I couldn't even believe that he would be allowed, but he was. So anyway, and I think that that's, I think that was a good example of how people are processing violence in our world, period.
Yeah. I think that's a good point. Yeah. I think that's a very good point, Pinkley. Well, why don't we take a moment here, and I will give a little shout-out about our organization called Heal Everywhere, and it's an organization designed for people once they are out of danger and trying to recover from an abusive relationship. And sometimes that can be kind of hard because people have PTSD and all sorts of things that can linger with them after the violence has ceased. But our organization, Heal Everywhere, is an organization that helps those people who are at that point in their lives. And one of the programs that we have is called DB Doggy. And under the Americans with Disabilities Act, there is a potential, a possibility for women who have PTSD or anxiety or chronic depression to benefit maybe from a service dog. So what we try to do is to educate, first of all, about domestic violence and the lingering effects of domestic violence on women. And we also try to pair them up with a service animal that helps them with some of the needs that they have. So we call it DV Doggy. And we're always looking for help or suggestions or ideas, money, and you can connect with us on Facebook at HEAL, H-E-A-L-E. So thank you for that. And now, ladies, are we done with Pistorius? Shall we move on to another topic?
I think so. What do you want to update us on, Heather?
Well, I want to update us on abortion. I mean, I have noticed that during the VAWA discussions, all of a sudden, states, individual states, started doing things about abortion. Now, an example from just this week, Michigan has instituted a 3-day waiting period and requiring an appointment to a crisis pregnancy center before they will allow an abortion, even though abortion is legal. Arkansas came out this week and said completely outlawed abortion after 20 weeks. And their reasoning for that is that a fetus might be able to feel pain after 20 weeks. And actually, they're the 10th state that has actually instituted a time limit for abortions. Alaska is discussing this. Kentucky is also looking at a hot debate about limiting access to abortion, limiting the freedom to just go get an abortion. Washington State, although the state is clearly in favor of permitting abortion and not putting restrictions on it, nevertheless, there is discussion and they're talking about having some Senate hearings about whether or not Washington State's abortion law should be changed. And as I was reading the stuff about VAWA, I thought, wait a minute. All of a sudden, we're putting pressure on VAWA, you know, the Violence Against Women's Act that has been pretty much sacrosanct for 20 years or 15 years. And now abortion, I mean, I thought we had this debate 30 years ago. And now all of a sudden, we're starting to see this resurgence of legislation in different states putting limitations on abortion. And I know for the Obama Health Care Act, abortion was a hotly debated issue, and they monkeyed around with that a little bit so that it would not require employers to pay for abortion. But it does, I believe, it does require insurance companies to pay for abortion. It certainly mandates insurance companies to provide birth control, even if an employer doesn't. So I'm wondering if there is kind of a resurgence of some real, some real hatred about women's issues in this country. Am I being overly dramatic here?
I think what you're calling a, what you're talking about is not just recent. This has actually been going on for the last 10 years, I would say, since I've been kind of aware of public policy and what paying more attention to what our legislators are doing. Because of my work, number one, but because of my personal beliefs, too. So I think that this is just, that's like it was an opportunity. While most of the women's organizations were focused on passing the Violence Against Women Act, they had more room to maneuver in the states, in the lower courts, which weren't getting the same level of attention, see? So I think they were able to get those through without, you know, maybe the same level of scrutiny that they may have had. What do you think, Kai Su?
Wow. All I could think of is the book that I've been trying to struggle through, and that's called Hijacked. The right-wing religious communities are uprising and trying to readdress these issues that I thought were already handled and dealt with 30, 40 years ago. Why is all this becoming an issue now again?
I think it's what has been termed the war on women. I mean, we noticed it a lot during the presidential reelection campaigns,
yeah,
right?
Re-election, yeah. Yep.
They talked a lot about women's rights being, I mean, it's the fair pay, it's gender equity and parity, and, of course, abortion. So I think that it's not it's abortion and all reproductive rights, I would say, that have been under scrutiny by the more conservative and more religious communities. So this is not really
why
new.
Now, do you think?
What was that, Heather?
Why now? I mean, I agree with Pinkley. I mean, I thought these, although certainly it's still debated about abortion all the time, but I thought we had pretty much established the laws, you know, 25, 30 years ago.
Well, we do have established laws, but in our country, you have the right to revisit everything.
Well, that's true.
So it's not a new campaign. It's a continued, in my opinion, it's a continued and kind of amped up campaign. While we're busy focusing on domestic violence and sexual violence on the level of a national legislation, then the states and lower courts can do more of the things they want without the same level of scrutiny. I don't think it's new. I think it's an ongoing and an amped up, certainly, but I don't think it's new.
Well, I haven't seen a lot in the media, although it's certainly reported when a state does this. There doesn't seem to be a lot of editorial. There doesn't seem to be a lot of commentary. I don't watch a lot of TV, but what I've seen is that it's basically non-existent on television news. So why, how come we're not talking more about this? Were we distracted by VAWA?
Yes. That's my opinion, yes.
I would totally agree with you on that.
Yeah,
I think it's
well,
kind
now
of
that
a
law
strategy
was
that
care.
You know opposing campaigns will use. You know, distract your opponent over here, and we can subvertly do this stuff over here.
Yeah.
I mean, it is
sleight
kind
of hand kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I'm ambivalent about abortion, but I don't think there should be laws restricting it. I think it should be an individual decision, an individual choice. I know when my daughter, you know, was young and she asked me about abortion, I said, well, my views on abortion is that it's terrible, horrible. Nobody should ever, ever have to make that choice. Nevertheless, sometimes the awful choice is still the better choice. And I certainly don't want to pretend to make such a significant choice for someone else. So
yeah.
Those are my personal views on it.
Would you say you're pro-choice then, Heather?
Yes. I'm
going
to sneeze, ladies. Hold on.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not ambivalent about it at all. I'm definitely pro-choice. I think that is an individual right and responsibility, and there are tons of reasons why it needs to be in place, because if we don't have it in place and done above board, it's going to be done below board and in back alleys, and more people will die as a result of it. And I just want to reiterate that there have been practices since time began to prevent pregnancy and those sorts of things. So it isn't like it is only a 20th or 21st century issue. This has been ongoing since humanity began.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and in fact, they used to, you know, the debate was it's okay to kill the child within a certain time after it was born.
Right.
If you didn't want that child. And then it went to, you know, all, from there all the way up to where we are now.
Well, I've heard discussions in other countries where having boys as the preferred child, that if they had girls, that they would kill them after birth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And,
well, and
in
China,
yeah.
There's orphanages are almost exclusively for girls.
Exactly.
You know, so, but on the other hand, that policy has been in place for more than 20 years in China, and now they're having a real crisis because men can't find wives. Well, gosh, who could have seen that coming?
Yeah, unintended consequences, right?
That's right. That's right. So women there are, you know, I mean, they're very much wooed financially and emotionally because
at the same time,
they're a rarer commodity.
They still experience, say, a high level of sexual violence and domestic violence, too. So it's kind of like a two-edged sword.
Yeah. Well, speaking of sexual violence, do you want to give us a real quick update on the situation in India?
Well, I don't know how quick I can do it, but I'll try my best. Yes, India has been very active since the December gang rape, and she subsequently died, of a young woman in India. And what happened in India after that was they developed a commission called the Verma Commission in India. And they made 10 recommendations to the India government. And after that, the Indian government has then put into place, it's not finalized, but they did propose a bill. And that was meant to increase women's safety and end the impunity for sexual violence and domestic violence in India. But in fact, women's groups are against the proposed law, very vehemently opposed to it. In fact, they're calling on their government saying, it's not acceptable, you pick and choose what you want from the commission. And most of the things that the India government proposed were not things that would really change women's equity and empowerment within the government. Some of the things they forgot to include were like that political actors can't be charged with a crime. So their military police can't be charged with a crime. And political people who have been accused of this type of violence can't be excluded from public office and these types of things. So, and now in response to that, the India government says, we have listened to it. This is only a proposed ordinance. It hasn't been gone through. And please have patience and go through the process to the Indian people. But one of the things they did that was definitely not in line with the Verma Commission was they are advocating for the death penalty for sexual criminals. And that is not something that the Verma panel suggested. They wanted punishment, jail time, but they did not advocate for death penalty. So I think it's really interesting that the Indian government directly went to, let's put them to death. What do you think about that?
I am shocked at the situation in India. It seems like every day I read something else about, you know, some woman, some child being punished because she was raped. She was a victim. And I think it was India, wasn't it not, where one rape victim, a young woman, was forced to marry her rapist. I think that's commonly done as well.
Yeah.
In this day and age, to value women so so lowly is astonishing to me. I just can't understand the thinking in this day and age that would allow women to be treated so cavalierly. Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes sense. What do you think, Pinkley?
Well, I think that unfortunately, well, it's fortunate, it's an unintended consequence. Rape is never okay. I think we can all agree with that. On a humanity level, anyone that is forced to behave or act in a way that is not of consent or, you know, a personal choice. But through this process, I think that there's much awareness that's occurring. And I guess I ask the question, why does something so atrocious have to happen before we start paying attention to it?
Yeah.
We know from the beginning of time, like you said earlier, Deb, that this occurs and this happens. And out of some really horrific things that have occurred in our world events, social change has occurred. I have mixed feelings about the death penalty. You know, some people say castrate them. I mean, there's all sorts of different approaches, but I think that's not the answer. The answer is to end violence. And how do we do that? That's a huge topic.
Yeah.
I think any end to violence against women has to be approached from the standpoint of learning to value all human beings. Does that sound too lofty? But this,
well, it might be lofty, but
all
it's
people,
truth. Yeah,
all
I mean,
people are valued. You know, when one segment of our society or other segments of our society are not valued as highly as others, then it's okay to do something to them if you don't like them or don't want to, or you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I think what's important here is that India is in fact trying to make a quick response. They're trying, I think, you know, their intentions may be good. And I was at least relieved to hear that this was a proposed ordinance and not one that had been, you know, signed, sealed, and delivered. So there is still some time for people to meet and work on what the actual final result will be. But, yeah, it's there was another multiple rape of three young girls on their way to school in India. So, you know, it's just a dangerous world out there for women, and it's unfortunate that right now we're just focused on India because it's happening in every country in the world. This is a global issue that women are not given equity and, you know, protection from violence. So
yeah, well, they're not given equity and value. So I'm looking at our clock, ladies, and boy, we've shot through the time today. Any final real quick comments, Pinkley, that about our updates here?
Well, I think that an update. I really appreciate our caller calling in from the UK. That was pretty exciting. And just yet another perspective on how the world is trying to process really horrific events, and I appreciated that very much.
Good. Deborah, you have our final quote for today?
I do, and this quote is from Krista McAuliffe, and she says,
Krista McAuliffe, the astronaut?
No.
No?
Well, she might have been. It doesn't say whether she was or not.
Okay.
He says, "I touch the future, I teach." And I think that's a really good way for us to think about it. I look at this, our radio show, as an opportunity to teach. And I'm excited to listen, have another show next week. So thank you for listening. And we are three divas.
Three women.
Three ways.
All right.
Thank you so much for joining us. We're going to be here again next Saturday at 10 a.m. And we'll be discussing current events that are very important.